The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Libertarians Working for You with host Arvind Vora. Our program explains how to solve the most critical problems we face in America today: unemployment, debt, healthcare affordability, high taxes, loss of personal freedoms, loss of privacy, threats of war, and more. Now, here is your host, Arvind Vora.
Welcome to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vora. Across the country today, people are filing their income tax returns. And many of us grudgingly do so, thinking that there's going to be some kind of benefit that we're going to get from that. But the stark reality is, the real benefits aren't going to the people. They're going to politicians and to their politically connected cronies. That's why all across the country, we're seeing a huge increase in libertarian registrations and in the number of people running for office as libertarians. We're seeing these changes happening at the federal level, at the local level, and at the state level. My first guest is running at the state level in New Jersey. His name is Damian Cayo, and he's running for state assembly in the 27th district. Damian, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you?
Damian, when you look at the current situation in New Jersey, what are some parts of government that you think we could roll back and have that lead to some kind of a benefit?
Well, the benefit, it's obvious. The minute we start paying less to the government, we have more disposable income, and, well, the private sector tend to make a better use of it. So just better quality of life and more freedom.
Absolutely. Now, if we start to do this process, if we start to look at New Jersey's regulations and New Jersey's taxes, what are some of the types of taxes that you think could be reduced?
Well, all of them. We start by, I think we pay a state income tax of up to 9%, and people think it's just the way it has to be. Well, not true. Up to 1975, I think, New Jersey didn't have a state income tax. And I don't see anything that New Jerseyans have now that they didn't have until 1975. We pay, I think, the highest property tax in the country. What for? Do we have the best schools? I'm not sure. Do we have the best roads? Definitely not. So where is it going? I'm afraid it's going mostly to just too much bureaucracy, too much government, too much control. So we just have to stop slicing it quick. And first will be to stop the growth. That would be one thing, because every elections you have somebody new coming and promising something new, and everything they have to give, well, first they have to take it from us. So first
Absolutely.
We need to make sure that they stop taking, and then we'll try to reduce the government.
Now it's interesting that you said New Jersey has both a high income tax and it also has a high property tax. Mm-hmm. And to me, this is really endemic of the type of technique and the type of tactics that big government likes to use. Instead of just giving you one astronomically huge tax, they give you one astronomically huge tax plus 50 other blatant taxes, like property taxes and sales taxes. And then on top of that, they give you hidden taxes so that when you buy, for example, a cell phone, instead of paying the amount that you would normally pay if there was no taxes and fees, you're now paying twice that or three times that. What are ways that as a state assembly person, let me ask you this actually point blank. If you are elected, would you be willing to sponsor or co-sponsor or vote for legislation that completely eliminated the income tax in New Jersey?
No. No, I may surprise you, but I wouldn't, because I'm afraid all we will be doing is smoke and mirrors. We suppress income tax there. We're going to grow some tax somewhere else. And it's still going to be taxing a little more here, taxing a little more there. we will still be playing the same game. It wouldn't solve anything.
So your
I think the beginning is to stop, to cut spending. And from there, we can slowly get rid of some taxes or bring it down to an acceptable level where people have an incentive to go to work.
So what you say is that in order for us to get real tax reduction, not this kind of thing where you push it down in one area and it pops up somewhere else, we can't do that, you're saying, with tax cuts alone. We have to do that by cutting government regulation, by cutting government departments, by cutting government spending.
Absolutely.
What in where in New Jersey do you think that we should begin the process of cutting spending?
Well, it's a hard subject to talk about, but we have an issue with education. I mean, you have some areas like in Newark, in Camden, in Patterson. Those are areas that everybody up all the way to California have heard about, and not for good reasons. They pay something like $25,000 per year per kid. For what result?
Wow.
They don't have anything to show for that. So spending so much money on kids is not working. Money doesn't seem to be the answer. So how come, you may wonder? Well, teachers make a decent living, but they don't make that much money when you think about it. They have good conditions, they have good benefits, and we need to renegotiate that. But I'm thinking more in, you know, higher than them. I think teachers get only 10% of the money we put towards education. Mm-hmm. Administration of education is costing a fortune. Mm-hmm. The administrators of the police department, fire department, these people are living really well. These people, if they can make it through a nice, comfortable retirement, can then start double dipping. So you have people, again, I'm not blaming them, but you have people that have a retirement of, say, $60,000 a year, which is not bad. If you, you know, if you, you paid off your mortgage, you have great health insurance. There's a lot of things that as a state employee or city employee, you don't have to worry about. So you make that much. Fine, good for them. They worked for it. But then they can take on another job as an administrator or sheriff or this, that, and make another six-figure salary on top of the pension.
And so we really have people that are working the system here. They're getting their retirement, plus they're now also working an unnecessary or just redundant administrative job.
Yes, and I see some other parts of New Jersey. Thankfully, my district, I think, is fairly clean. But I see other areas of New Jersey where somehow it stays within a couple of families. You know, one guy would be elected to the state assembly, and somehow the sheriff is going to become his son-in-law, his brother-in-law, and the contractor that this town is going to use is going to be the cousin of that guy. I mean, it becomes a scam. Let's call it for what it is. It's corruption. That's what's costing us a fortune.
And do you believe that if we reduce that corruption, if we find a way to start attacking that corruption, do you think that the results will be that we can actually cut government spending?
That would be one big step. I will see that as stopping the bleeding.
What's the next step then?
Well, the next step, we have to reorganize for new people who come in, new teachers. We have to say, look, we just can't promise you the type of pension and health benefits we could before. So we have to discuss whether they have to choose between more money, but they get their own IRA, their own 401k, or less money and a pension, or we have to renegotiate it. And right now it's not easy because in New Jersey, it's a heavily Democrat state, and the unions put these people to work. So we're not getting a fair deal.
Now, what about, you know, we've seen across the country in education, we've seen so many people starting to see a very interesting success by just getting out of the public school system entirely. You know, we're seeing
That will be the solution eventually. It's hard to convince people to think outside the box, but I mean, you have charter school who's done a great job in Newark. You have some charter schools that have been a great job in New York City, and Mayor de Blasio is fighting them tooth and nail. Why?
And that's the question. Why would teachers unions, supposedly in favor of education, be fighting against schools that are doing good education?
Oh, they're not in favor of education. they've never been in favor of education. They're in favor of keeping themselves safe. They are in favor of making sure their boss makes a lot of money. They've never been in favor of education. They're in favor of a few public workers. They don't even represent the majority of teachers. I don't think so.
There's probably quite a bit of truth to exactly that particular statement and that sentiment right over there. Right now, not even that many years ago, homeschooling was this extremely rare thing. Right now, according to the latest statistics, it's 3.4% of the school age population is getting homeschooled. Do you see in New Jersey more people trying to opt out of the New Jersey system, and is New Jersey allowing that to happen?
I don't know about opting out, but I'm seeing more and more people doubting the school system. And I think, maybe 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago, not so many people will question it. They'll still have faith in the public school. Nowadays, I think more and more people from both sides of the political scheme, by the way, mm-hmm. are getting full of doubt about what schools can do. And actually, I was thinking one thing. These towns where, as I said, Camden, New Jersey, Newark, New Jersey, where we spend up to $25,000 average per student, I'm thinking, mm-hmm. think of homeschooling. Think of one of the mothers will say, well, you know what, instead of trying to work for minimum wage and make very little money and still need welfare to survive, how about I take my kid and another 4 kids and I teach them myself? So on mm-hmm. paper, that's about $125,000 per year you should pay that lady. Well, I bet you she can do a much better job with these kids and get them through high school successfully. And, that's one less person that will be unemployed. I mean, it sounds stupid and basic, but it's just common sense.
It is, and it's interesting. We're seeing so many of this focus. So many of the guests in the show have been talking about ways to smooth the transition. I mean, I think at this point, most people are realizing that the transition out of the public school system has to happen.
It's a broken system. Yeah, we just have to make smooth to not scare too many people off.
Yeah, so the questions become, how do we smooth that thing out? Let's actually talk a little bit more about exactly that particular issue right after this break. Before we go on break, Damien, if somebody wants to learn more about your campaign, where should they go?
Well, they can look me up on Facebook, Damien for Liberty or Damien Cayo Libertarian Party. Okay. And my website is going to be up soon, DamienForLiberty.com.
Okay, DamienForLiberty.com.
Yes, sir.
Now, here's the thing. If you guys are listening to the show right now, you know that you have people like Damien that are working hard to make sure that we can downsize government to improve education, downsize government so that we can eventually lower taxes, downsize government to improve your lives. But Damien can't do this all by himself. We need your help. If you want to get involved in the libertarian campaign in your state, go to lp.org/states. You might decide to join a campaign on social media, work at booths, even go door to door. In fact, you might even decide to do exactly what Damien's doing and make the biggest contribution to the cause of liberty you possibly can by running for office yourself. But the first step is to go to lp.org/states. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. We'll be right back.
What can you find on Get Real Radio? Well, quite honestly, who you really are. Join host James Robinson each week for a program designed to reveal more about yourself and your world through words of wisdom and profound guests. You'll discover more about the spiritual movement and how it can work with you and alert you to problems you may not be aware of. It will educate, titillate, and enlighten your mind. Get Real Radio is broadcast live every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. This could end up being the best time of your week.
The world we live in has become a crazy place. Poverty is at an all-time high in the wealthiest nation on earth. We keep calling on government to save us with new programs. And now, we have more people using food stamps than any time in our history. this problem continues to get worse. The answer to poverty is in our homes, churches, and communities, and through our children. Get the answers from The Mickey Ellison Show, Wednesdays at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, 11 a.m. Eastern, on Voice America Variety.
There are over 140 million products manufactured worldwide. It is impossible to know the ingredients in these products, especially those made overseas. Stan Salat, creator of the HSF Mark and the Counterfeit Mark Alliance, is the host of People to People, working together for your safety. Stan believes in our right to know the type and amount of hazardous materials in consumer products and whether they are counterfeit. Find out how you can protect yourself every Tuesday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, 5 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Variety.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Arvin Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvin Vora. We all know that we need to reduce government spending and reduce government taxation. My guest today is Damian Cayo, and he's telling us that to reduce taxes and not have some other tax appear somewhere else, we have to fight the problem at the source, and that source is government spending and government involvement. One of the biggest areas of government involvement in our day-to-day lives is education, and by downsizing government's influence in education, we're going to be able to reduce taxes, reduce spending, and even improve the quality of education. But a big part of that, Damian, as you were saying before, is smoothing the transition. I mean, what are the ways that we can make it easier for people to kind of wean themselves from this just completely hurtful addiction to public education?
Well, let people do their own thing. And I think there are a few charter schools around the country and here in New Jersey that are doing a fairly good job. The results will speak for themselves. You know, when they can come and say, hey, look how much less than the public school we spent and look at how much better the results are. And if parents are free to choose whether they want to send their kids to that public school or that charter school, change will happen on its own. Yeah, so competition, that's the answer.
It is interesting when we look right now, you know, at the private sector of education. You know, I work in the private sector of education, and while my particular business is, if anything, quite possibly more expensive than public schools, you know, I look at many of the competitors in this area, many of which provide excellent education, and they often do it at a fraction of the cost. I mean, we're talking about famous companies like Kumon, etc., where they charge like $100 or $200 a month. I mean, that's like a tenth of what you're saying we're spending in New Jersey for public school, but it's also getting better results. So, I mean, we already have – the private sector is already showing that it can do this job better. Let's talk about some of the other areas in which the private sector can do things better than the public sector can. What are some of those areas, in your view, that the private sector should be taking over?
Well, it's not so much taking over. It's just let people, you know, private sector sounds like a big, very obscure thing. It's just people in the end. When you have somebody who's unemployed, if it could be easy, really easy for him to just, or her, to just start a company and get going, that will just solve so many problems. I mean, down here in New Jersey, you need a license to be a hairstylist. Come on.
So you're saying that if you don't have a license to be a hairstylist, and if you happen to be good at it, and your customers want you to do their hair because they've seen your good work, you're just not allowed to do it?
Correct.
See,
and our state is full of that. It's like we don't want people to create their own companies. We don't want people to make a living. It does not make any sense. So in the end, we know what it is. It's just in the name of protecting customers, which we know is just not true. Because if somebody is not good, he's not going to do, you know, he's not going to have a good business and he's not going to last a long time, plain and simple. But in, you know, using that as an excuse, well, they put basically barriers to new entrants to any market. Recently at the North Jersey Libertarian meeting we had, I spoke with someone who said that he was trying to run a store, a shop, to fix heavy machinery, like trucks and, you know, construction type of equipment.
Sure.
And he said he was forced to use specific type of equipment to fix that equipment because the state told him to. So there are two things here. If it's for safety, okay, I get it. Why not? The issue is very often then you have only one manufacturer who can supply that.
Yeah.
So you have to wonder if that manufacturer was not hand-in-hand with the legislature, which most of the time happens.
Yeah.
And the other thing is maybe they just don't want enough competitions because it means that there's a big cost to getting into this business, which means we don't want too many people competing, which means we don't want that service to be affordable.
That's an important point. You know, I think that a lot of people don't really understand where these regulations come from. You know, if you're a well-established business and you've been in business for 20 years, the last thing that you want is somebody else coming into business. You don't want more competition. You want less competition. So what often you'll see happen is that it's not that the government pushes for more regulations. It's the businesses that push for more regulations on their competitors to make it harder for other people to get involved. This is corruption in the most pure and basic sense of the word.
Mm-hmm. And that is very sad. And generally speaking, I think it's more about when people get reach a certain level of, I don't want to say wealth, but of well-being as a society, they get more afraid to lose what they have than to try to get a better future for future generations. And that's the point where we are at right now. But the laws make it to keep people who have something from losing it, to make sure they can keep it. The problem is that by doing that, we are keeping people in poverty. Or we are preventing people, discouraging people from empower themselves, take care of themselves, and rise up in society. That's just not right.
And that's very key. I mean, you know, a lot of times people talk about, personality, that, some people who are unemployed, how could they start a business? Well, to me, there's two things that people aren't realizing. Number one, if somebody's starting a business, then they'll often, in order to run that business, hire other people. So starting a business also means increasing all types of jobs.
Absolutely.
But quite frankly, there are going to be some people that are better at doing a job than running a business. And there's, on the other hand, going to be some people that are just better at running businesses than they're ever going to be at doing jobs. And I believe what we need to do is to allow people to start businesses so that we have more people running businesses. And at the same time, therefore, those people are creating the jobs. Now, would the legislature then work to reduce these regulations on new businesses?
Absolutely.
And would you be willing to sponsor or co-sponsor legislation to reduce those regulations?
Yes, absolutely. The thing is that it's tricky because it's not so much about bringing new legislation as it is about destroying old one.
I think that's a perfect way to put it, destroying the old legislation that is holding us back from economic growth.
Exactly. I mean, we have layers and layers of legislation adding up and stacking up to the ceiling. I think it's more about to cut it than to bring new one.
What about, let's talk a little bit about, I mean, there's the regulations on our businesses that we have that are so crippling and so burdensome and so expensive. But another type of regulation that we have in America is regulations on our personal lives. What types of regulations on our individual freedoms do you think should either be added to remove something, or what regulations do you think should be destroyed?
Well, first, there's some freedom, some liberties that we need to protect. I'm a big believer in women's choice to dispose of the body, and this is a right that is never perfectly secured. So that's something, that type of rights that we need to defend. One change that seems to be obvious that has to be done now is the war on drugs. I mean, clearly it has failed. We are spending fortune persecuting people, enforcing the law, which is not fair, then making sure, you know, spending a lot of money in the justice system to make sure we send them to jail, and then having to pay for jail. That's a lot of money we're spending for nothing. In the meantime, let's be honest, most people have smoked at some point. And, you know, whether it's 70%, 50%, 40% of the population, doesn't matter. It could be anyone. It could be your father, it could be your brother, it could be your niece, it could be anyone. We are taking some kids, say 19, 20 years old, catching them for what? For smoking something that somebody says was not good? I mean, it doesn't make them any smarter, but it's not going to kill them either. And I can think of five different substances that are easier to get that can do them more damage. That's a debate for another day. The point is, we take these people, and if they get caught, they get sent to jail, and they become felons. Mm-hmm. And then most of their life would be over. I wish many people who are 40s, 50s, 60s and had a good career, a good life, take a moment to think, hey, what if, you know, back when I was in college, imagine if I would have gotten caught smoking a joint, how different my life would have been, how much mm-hmm. trouble I would have been in. They don't have too much of thinking to do because truth is it doesn't really happen. Unfortunately, it hits the minorities the most.
Mm-hmm.
This is just not working. And if we go past the, the old school, the old way of thinking that alcohol is okay, tobacco is so American, it's okay. Pharmaceutical company says antidepressants are okay, or painkillers mm-hmm. are not so bad after all, but marijuana is bad.
Mm-hmm.
If we can just get past that and look at the facts, we need to end this. We need to fix it. We need to start changing it. It can be done little by little. That's fine. As a libertarian, I wish that everything will trade freely. But if the first step will mean just decriminalizing it and taxing it, and by the way, we could use the money for our pension fund, I don't have a problem with that. It's time.
I think there's so much truth to that, and I think that really it's one of those things where every incremental step brings us benefit. You know, we can start reducing our total. You know, if we don't spend all this money on enforcing marijuana laws, then we're able to, you know, reduce our government employees, our number of government employees. We're able to reduce the spending on all that, and really eventually, you know, I think you're right that we can eventually, by cutting things down, start to then reduce taxes. Damien,
mentioning by making it illegal, we are handing all that business, that big money making business, to gangs. I mean, the mafia have never been so powerful as when alcohol was illegal during Prohibition. We're doing the same with gangs right now. We're actually doing them a service. Better than that, we are recruiting for them by taking kids and who've done nothing more than smoking a joint and throwing them to jail. When they can't find a job in the legal society, how do you think they're going to make money?
And that, I think, is exactly the thing. We're forcing people to not be able to get legal jobs and creating a huge market for illegal employees through this drug war. And I think you're right. If we shut down both parts of it, we're going to see so many benefits. Damien, let me thank you first so much for taking the time to be on the show today.
Well, thanks for having me.
Guys, if you want to find out more about Damien, go to facebook.com/DamienForLiberty. If you want to get involved in a libertarian campaign in your state, go to lp.org/states. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vora. We'll be right back.
Ready to chat about your favorite soap operas? The Daytime Discussion is here with Dan J. Kroll and Soap Central Live. For the past 15 years, Dan has been dishing and discussing on SoapCentral.com. And now he's taking the talk to the airwaves of the Voice America Variety Channel. You'll go behind the scenes with the biggest stars of daytime, along with guest commentary from the Soap Central columnists. And we'll take your questions and comments during our live show. Soap Central Live, every Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific, on Voice America Variety.
Tired of lackluster results with your marketing? Craving more leads in your business? Tune in to the Mojo Marketing Edge with the team behind Mojo Global Marketing, Ira Rosen and Corey Michael Sanchez. Winners of the Marketer of the Year, they will show you how to generate daily leads, build databases of raving fans, and close deals faster than ever before. See what's hot right now and how you can tap into it to generate an endless supply of customers and clients. The Mojo Marketing Edge can be heard every Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
We hear it and read about it every day in the news.
Stock prices plunging, home prices receding, and unemployment growing.
How can you preserve and increase your wealth in this kind of economy? Tune in to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with host Jay Taylor. Jay will explain the decline of our monetary system and the economy and will give you winning investment ideas and the tools to protect and increase your wealth. Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor can be heard Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Arvind Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vora. If you saw a few days ago on C-SPAN, you might have. If you're watching C-SPAN a few days ago, you probably saw Nick Sarwark give a rock solid interview where he explained the principles, the causes, and the benefits of libertarianism. And if you haven't seen that interview, I highly, highly recommend taking the time to watch it. It is one of the most flawlessly done, one of the most excellently presented summaries of libertarian philosophy, as well as the benefits of voting libertarian. Now, one of the questions that came up during that interview is that age-old question we hear in libertarianism, which is, if we do what libertarians want to do, which is massively downsize government, cut government spending to 1998 levels, and then eliminate the income tax. If we do all that, the question that people always ask is this: well, who's going to build the roads? Well, before we get to that question, before we talk about who will build the roads, let's ask some of the other questions. Roads, after all, are a tiny fraction of the government budget. The real question to me is, if we massively downsize the federal government and we massively downsize the state government, who will continue the war on drugs? Who will continue to fund and recruit for, as Damien just put it, the violent drug cartels? Who will keep filling our prisons with nonviolent drug offenders? My hope is that no one will do that. My hope is that when we cut that part of government, we just cut the taxes accordingly and don't replace it with anything at all. Another question might be, without government, who will artificially deinflate the price of medical care? Now, I know that you hear from people that'll tell you that because medical technology has become more advanced, medical care has to become more expensive. But we have seen in our own lifetimes that that's just simply not true. Take a look at laser eye surgery. A couple decades ago, it was the stuff of science fiction. And today, the prices have come down so far that it's affordable to practically anybody. And we're talking about a procedure that is so precise. We're talking about taking a laser and using it to carve into parts of your eye. That is advanced technology. That's as advanced as it gets. But it's also cost-effective. And do you know why it is cost-effective? Because it's not covered by government health insurance at all. The government simply has nothing to do with it. So the private sector relies on the usual incentive that we always have to lower costs, which is this: if you charge less, you're going to get more business. If we didn't have the government, who would make education both expensive and incompetent? Who would make sure that our education system without the government was the laughingstock of the entire world? who would make sure that we spent more than any other country, like the way we do now, to have the worst among the worst results in the entire civilized world, the way we do right now? Who would squander our resources on our behalf if we didn't have the government? Who would make sure that we use completely backwards and ineffective curricula like Common Core if it wasn't for the government? Who would do that? My answer and my hope is that nobody would do that. That with the government completely out of education, we would have affordable private sector education the way, not that we will, the way that we already do. Private educational companies that people turn to when their schools fail them already charge a tiny fraction of the cost of overspending and inefficient public schools. Without the government, who would make sure that if you are either a woman, or if you're older, or if you're smaller, who would make sure that you have to be completely unsafe whenever you're out in public? Who would make sure, even if you're a very large, strong martial arts fighter, who would make sure that you had to be afraid that 3 or 4 or 10 other people couldn't jump you, couldn't use a weapon to rob you, to mug you, to harm you, to kill you? Who would make sure that you were defenseless without the government? Because that's what the government does right now. It uses its regulatory power, it uses its staff to make sure that you cannot defend yourself by infringing on our most basic right, which is the right to defend yourself, as codified and expressed in the Second Amendment. Imagine if we got rid of that, if we got rid of all the restrictions on gun ownership, and every single person was allowed to defend himself or herself from harm. I think the first thing that you would see is this. Criminals, now not knowing who does and who doesn't have a weapon, would be a lot less likely to try to use violence and force to attack somebody to deprive them of life or property. Without government, we would be safer. We would be able to defend ourselves in our homes and outside of our homes and make sure that our communities are safe from those who would try to use violence to do harm. Without the government, who would take our resources, both monetary and our life resources, and squander them in ill-considered foreign military operations? Without the government, who would take $4,000 from every single family and use it to destroy the lives of families abroad? Without the government, who would take young men and women who are dedicated and disciplined and needlessly put them in harm's way in ill-considered and ill-fated military operations abroad? My hope is that no one would do that, because that's not something that needs to be done. That is something that we are better off without. Without the government, who would take our money and use it and give it to other countries, many of whom are somewhat hostile to the United States? Now, I'm not saying that any individual doesn't have the right to donate their money to whoever they see fit. That's totally fine. That's your right. But it's not the right of the government to take money from you and give it to a country or a group of countries, some of whom you may like and some of whom you may not like. That is simply not their job. Without government, without our bloated and inefficient federal government, who would do that? My deep hope is that no one would do that. Without government, who would make it harder to start up a small business? As an entrepreneur myself, I know that businesses face two challenges. One is the normal challenge of business, the challenge to provide a superior product to your competitors, or perhaps a product that's not necessarily better, but just maybe fits somebody's needs better. After all, a blue shirt is not inherently better than a red shirt, but if somebody wants a blue shirt and that's something that you provide and no one else does, that might give you a bit of an advantage. So one part of business is providing better products and better services to those who want them, or at a lower cost to those who want them. And that is a legitimate challenge, and that's a challenge that many businesses struggle with, and it inspires them and it makes them better. It makes all of us have better access to better goods and better services. But today, businesses have a secondary challenge, and that's the challenge of dealing with and overcoming government regulation. After all, if a big part of your business is going to be the legal fees, the startup fees, the regulatory fees, you're going to end up driving a lot of people away from business because they simply cannot afford to do that. There are going to be some people who maybe can afford to do that, but their skills lie elsewhere. After all, many of us realize that if you want to get, for example, a shirt or a computer made, you would prefer to get that shirt made or that computer made from someone who has dedicated his or her lives to making shirts or to making computers. You would want somebody that has spent all their time figuring out, how do I improve this shirt or how do I improve this computer? What you would not want is to have that shirt or that computer made by someone whose primary of expertise is handling government regulations. I'm not going to deny for a second that handling government regulations is something that takes quite a bit of skill. But I will say that that skill often comes at the expense of the skills that we care about, the skill of making better food, the skill of providing a better haircut, as Damien mentioned in the earlier part of this segment, the skill of providing better cosmetology, for that matter, the skill of providing better books, the skill of providing a better education without government involvement and government interference. Now, if cutting down the government and replacing it with nothing, we're cutting down these huge and invasive, quote, services that really serve as nothing but roadblocks, if removing those things and replacing it with absolutely nothing but freedom sounds good to you, well, you don't need to just talk about it or discuss it or debate it. You need to get to lp.org/states and get involved in a libertarian campaign in your state. You might join an existing campaign, maybe help out on social media, or even do traditional media outreach. You might work at booths. You might work on putting signs up in your yard or across your neighborhoods. You might go door to door and introduce people to the ideas of less government and more freedom. But if we're really lucky, and if you're willing to take the biggest step that you can possibly take to advance the cause of liberty, you're going to run for office as a libertarian. I've done it 3 times now, and every time I did that, I was able to bring more and more focus to the benefits of cutting government to advance freedom. The first step in that process, though, is getting to lp.org/states. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vora. We'll be right back.
Frankly Speaking About Cancer is a program designed to empower survivors and their caregivers to deal with the social and emotional challenges of cancer. Drawing on resources from wellness communities throughout America and abroad, the show will invite physicians, researchers, nurses, social workers, patients, and caregivers to share their advice on how to live a better life with cancer. Join host Kim Tibaldo, President and CEO of the Wellness Community, Tuesday afternoons at 1 p.m. Pacific Time and 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Network.
How do you achieve the utmost success in your life, career, faith, relationships, and more? It's all here in The Business of Living with host Scott Ventrella. Scott has experience as an executive coach, sought-after speaker, and lecturer. He and his guests will offer practical solutions and strategies to help you move to the next level of success, no matter where you are in your life and career. The Business of Living airs live every Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Conservation starts with us. Learn about environmental concerns each week when you tune in to Our Wild World with host Ellie Weiss. Our show centers on Africa each week and what's being done to save our wildlife, ecology, and ourselves. However, we'll also discuss what's going on closer to home. And most importantly, we'll let you know what can be done in our own backyards by featuring guest experts and featuring your questions and answers. Listen every Monday morning at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, 11 a.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Arvin Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvin Vora. Now, in the first and the last segment, we talked about who would do all these destructive and negative things without the government. Now let's turn to some of the positive or pseudo-positive things that the government does right now and start to answer those questions. After all, this today, April 15th, so many of us are registering, are submitting our tax returns. And we're doing it recognizing that most of that money is going to be used for something destructive, something immoral, something that's going to get in the way of businesses, jobs, and personal freedoms. We know that the vast majority of the money that we just paid is going to only harm people at home or harm people in other countries. We know that most of that money is going to either go to the war or to the war on drugs or to corporate welfare of some kind or another. We know that the regulations that it props up are going to be the very regulations that are going to stop your friends, your kids, your cousins, your neighbors, or people that you've never even met from starting a business and then creating jobs and creating better products and creating better innovations. We know that the bulk of that money is going just to hurt people. But the question is, what about that remaining 1% or 2%? That question always looms. Who will build the roads? Well, as it turns out, as Nick Sarwark so brilliantly put it a few days ago on C-SPAN, the same people will build the roads in the future as build the roads right now. Many of the services that you enjoy at home right now are actually privately contracted services, including most road building. Now, it's true that the contractors are hired currently by the government, but that doesn't mean they can only be hired by the government. We have tools and ways of raising money today that simply didn't exist a few years ago. We also have tools that allow people to charge those who use a service and not charge those who don't use a service. Even today, many government roads are entirely funded by technologies like EasyPass. Now, if EasyPass is paying for the roads and a private contractor is building them, well, why exactly do we need the government in the first place? When we look at things like Kickstarter that show us that we can raise huge amounts of money for programs and projects that people actually consider worthwhile, we realize there are all kinds of ways that we can fund road building. Instead of using government force to take money from people for scientific research or space exploration, well, maybe there are other ways that we can do that. We've seen already in the private sector that some of the most dramatic recent space exploration was funded by Red Bull, where we saw somebody literally jump from space to Earth in something that had never been done before, and that was privately funded. Is there any reason that we can't privately fund more space exploration using techniques like Kickstarter or whatever the next thing is that comes after Kickstarter? I don't think there's any reason at all that the great exploration of the future, there's no reason why we can't just have that entirely funded by individuals, by families, by even corporations. When we look at some of the positive benefits of government, some of the things that we say is, well, what about higher education? What about student loans? Well, the fact is that those student loans have actually driven up the cost of higher education. That without those loans, if we took away all government college subsidies today, then tomorrow colleges would have no choice but to lower their tuitions. In fact, as more and more people across the country are realizing that now, thanks to government involvement, college has become so expensive and so completely unaffordable, because so many people are realizing that, more and more people are just refusing to go to college. Peter Thiel, founder of PayPal, started the Thiel Scholarship, which gives people $50,000 a year to see what they can do without college. And that's his recognition to show that he feels that he was successful despite, not because of, his Stanford education. If we got rid of all government subsidies for higher education, the results would be very simple. Higher education would cost less. It would be affordable to more people. Instead of having to save money for somebody's entire childhood, parents could just afford college in the same way they can afford soccer classes or martial arts lessons or music lessons. If we completely got rid of all influence in the government in higher education, we would have higher education that was affordable and catered specifically to people's needs. And how do we do that? Well, eventually, the first step is partially going to be financial, as in remove all the incentives that exist right now for colleges to increase their tuitions. But a bigger part of that is going to be regulatory. Even today, one of the main reasons that people try to get official college degrees instead of trying to find some other form of higher education is because government jobs give favoritism to those with bachelor's degrees. However, in the parts of the government that are the most important in many ways, for example, the Foreign Service, they don't use degrees. They use certification tests. And that ideology that says, listen, we're not going to either fund colleges directly or boost them up indirectly through regulatory benefits, that first step is going to be what's going to give us the kind of higher education that we want and the kind of higher education that we deserve. Cutting government benefits all of us. It makes us safer. It improves our education. It gives us more money to donate to the charity, more money to spend on the arts. It allows us to support the kinds of businesses that we want and to start the kinds of businesses that we should all aspire to. But that's not going to happen by itself. The government is not going to reduce itself. We know that the government has one goal and one goal only, and that's to take as much money as it can, spend as much money as it can to interfere with our lives, and to continue to be as big and as meddlesome as humanly possible. So if you want to change that, get to lp.org/states and see how to get involved in a libertarian campaign in your state. You can get involved in an existing campaign. You might work in social media outreach. In fact, you might decide to run for office. And when you run for office, you give liberty a voice. You get covered in newspapers and magazines. You get radio interviews. You make sure that more and more people realize there is an entire group of us that are working to downsize big government and advance individual freedom. But the first step of that is getting to lp.org/states. Thanks for listening today. I'm Arvind Vohra, signing off until next week on Libertarians Working for You.
Thank you for tuning in to Libertarians Working for You. Please join Arvind Vohra again next Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. We hope you have a great week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.